Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the No Silicast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, November 4th, 2007, and this is show number 119. Oh, we have a lot of fun in store for us today, a bunch of listener feedback that's pretty fun. We're going to talk about how to bob as always. We're going to talk about car waxing, which I know you guys all love that. I've got a great review of Wiretap Studio. We've got a review from a guest reviewer this week. Paige Isinger is going to talk to us about Jump Chart, which is the hardest thing to say. You want to say Jump Start, but it's Jump Chart. Let's see. We're also going to have my very first interview. Bart and I decided to talk together about Leopard in our week two experiences. So sit back and enjoy the ride. Well, like I said, we're going to kick in with some listener feedback. I can't believe the great reaction you guys had to this week's homework assignment. A whole bunch of you went right up to iTunes and did reviews. I can't thank you enough. Many of you are waiting still for that just right time to get that action item done. So I do hope you get a chance to go up there and put up a review, because everybody can only vote once. And like I said, you don't even have to say something nice. Just say something. I did also find out from Bart that if someone puts up a review on their own country's iTunes store, I might not necessarily be able to see it. So he put up a review in the Irish iTunes store, but I can't see it from here. But that's okay. Other people can. So still do it. You might recall that last week I did say that you don't necessarily have to say something nice. Well, I do have to read one of the comments. And of course, it was put up there by listener James. He titled his review, "The Worst," and then gave it 5 stars. He said, and I quote, "I can barely stand this podcast. Don't bother." Oh, who am I kidding? Allison is a queen of all things that are slightly Macintosh bias, a living legend. She will go down in the annals of history as the one to bridge the gap between mere mortals and self-righteous computer geeks. Listen to this show, people. Okay, Allison, where's that $20 you owe me for lying to the unsuspecting iTunes public? See why I just love James? He slays me. Well, he also told me this in a chat message. "I subject my friend Jenny to your train wreck of a show whenever we carpool, which is 2 or 3 times a week. She's not a Mac user, but she really enjoys it. I don't think she's subscribed yet, though. I'm still working on that part." Well, I want to give a special shout out to Jenny, and tell her to get a new carpool partner as soon as possible. I don't think it's safe to have someone so clearly unstable knowing where you live. Well, I would also like to thank the normal listeners who wrote such nice reviews. FFT1024Guy, Jesse Gal, Mexen Flixian, David, Ben, Lynn, Len, Talk3, RGBCMYK, Joe Silk, Mark, Mike, and One Step Step One for writing such beautiful things. I know I asked you to write, but I'm floored by what wonderful things you wrote. Well, Lynn not only wrote a review, she sent me an email to tell me that she did last week's homework assignment. She also told a friend with a new MacBook about the podcast. Good job, Lynn. You get a gold star for the week. For those of you who haven't done your assignment just yet, please head on over to iTunes and write me a review. Last week, I talked about one scary feature, quote unquote, in JAlbum. Turns out if you try to remove a photo from the gallery, it permanently deletes the folder from your disk. Isn't that neat? Well, I ran into this when I simply wanted to exclude a couple of photos in a directory from being put into the web album. Listener Ryan wrote in with a productive solution. He said, "I listened to your latest podcast today, and when hearing about your problem with JAlbum, I remembered something that I had just noticed in JAlbum when putting together our pictures for a recent event. If you right-click on a photo in the gallery view and select Exclude, it won't include the picture in the gallery when it builds the web page. Hope that's what you're looking for, although the delete problem is strange nonetheless." Thanks, Ryan, for showing me the solution I needed. That's exactly what I was looking for. And thank you for backing me up that the delete permanently feature was a bit odd. Well, as you've probably figured out by now, Honda Bob is a sponsor of the No Silicast. He's my mechanic. I know, it's a little weird to have a mechanic sponsor a tech podcast, but that's what makes the No Silla Cast great. You never know what I'm going to talk about. It's just wild and crazy. Anyway, he's a geek too, so it all works out for the best. Honda Bob has been fixing our Honda and Acura cars since 1978. If that is not an endorsement, I don't know what is. He worked first on my 1976 yellow Honda Civic, the first Honda car with four whole cylinders, then Steve's 1980 silver Accord hatchback, my 1983 Accord sedan, Steve's black 1986 Prelude SI. That was a hot car. It was so cool he kept it for 14 years. My 1988 Accord sedan, the color on that one was called champagne beige, but it was really smog colored. I wanted to get black, but Steve made me get that ugly color. Oh, then there was Steve's black 2000 Accord coupe, my 2005 Acura TL, which I finally got in black, by the way I'd always wanted it. And finally, he's working now on Steve's 2007 Acura RDX. That's 8 cars in almost 30 years, and the Prelude is still on the road. The guy in our neighborhood who bought it and still has Honda Bob taking care of it is still driving it around. And our kids are still driving our 1998 and 2000 Accords, all in excellent working condition because of Honda Bob. If you drive a Honda or Acura, or you'd like an excuse to buy one, and you live or work in the LA or Orange County area, then give Honda Bob a call at 562-531-2321. Or shoot him an email at hdabob@aol.com. You can also visit his informative website at hdabob.com to learn more about how cars work. HDA Bob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda, Acura, or Honda Worldwide. Well, speaking of cars, throngs of people have been requesting that I create a car waxing tutorial where I explain the products and process I follow to complete my obsession. Rommel was actually going to finally wax his car this weekend after 10 years of neglect, so I finally got around to posting the tutorial. Steve and I actually created a little video explaining the process. It's not real professional, but it gets the point across. For some reason, there was a lot of traffic when I was doing it. But anyway, it certainly gets the flavor of my excitement about waxing cars. Anyway, the tutorial is posted permanently in the sidebar of podfeet.com. And I also put a link in the show notes. Hope you enjoy it. If you do follow my instructions or improvise on your own, take a picture of your car before and after and send it in. That'd be really fun. I did before and after shots on Lindsay's car as I decreated the tutorial, so you can see how swell it looks. Really looks awesome. And I mean, this is on a 1998 Accord. Well, next up, I'm going to create a page called Cars I Have Waxed. That should be fun to see how many I've done. Niraj tipped me off to a web service called JumpChart, which allows web developers to storyboard their design ideas for their customers before investing a lot of time in development. Since it's web-based, of course, it's cross-platform, which is great. I'm not a web designer, though, so I decided to enlist the help of my friend and web developer, Paige Isinger, of the Views from the Coop podcast over at viewsfromthecoop.com. I got her set up with an account over at jumpchart.com, and asked her to put JumpChart through its paces. Let's hear what she had to say about it.
Hello, this is Paige Chicky Chicky Isinger. I'm the co-host of a tech podcast for non-techies called Views from the Coop, thus the Chicky Chicky part. Thanks to my Mac chick friend Allison of the Nozilla Cast, I've recently had the opportunity to try out a cool new tool for website planning. It's called JumpChart, and you can check it out for yourself at www.jumpchart.com. Okay, first of all, let me explain what JumpChart does, or more specifically, what JumpChart did for me. As a web designer, the toughest thing I've ever had to do when I've started developing a brand new website for a client is planning it. If you've ever been on the design development end of a website, you know exactly what I mean. How many pages do I need? What do they need to be about? Do I need subpages? Do I need forms? Where does it all go? Years ago, during my first class on basic computer operations, I learned how to draw, yes, I said draw, a flowchart to map out the flow of the simple programs that we were learning to write at the time. I actually had one of those thin plastic templates with all the little symbols cut into it so that I could trace them onto my nifty computer flowchart paper. I really struggled then, and I still do now, with deciding what to put where in the scheme of things, and if I changed my mind, well, let's just say that I never drew a flowchart in ink, and I went through a ton of those big pink erasers. JumpChart is a service that helps us hard-working, never-have-enough-time-to-plan web designers create online interactive wireframes. Okay, for those of you who don't know what a wireframe is, and that included me before I tried JumpChart, a wireframe is a graphic representation or visualization tool, if you prefer, of a website that helps a team of web designers separate the different elements of the site by content, function, location, interactivity, and all the other stuff that goes into the finished product. You may be more familiar with the term sitemap. They're both kind of like the old flowchart from my computer class. You identify the elements and you display them graphically so that everyone can actually see how the whole shebang fits together. This whole process with JumpChart works great when you have several people who have input into the design process. In my case, the web design team consists of me and my client. Since I'm usually creating a website for someone whose experience with websites is usually from a user standpoint, it's hard sometimes, well, a lot of the time, maybe even most of the time, to organize the content and get approval from my client because the tools I mentioned already and that I use on a regular basis don't really lend themselves to interactivity. With JumpChart, I can create an online mock-up of a site that's actually interactive. I can create pages and subpages. I can insert graphics and forms. I don't even have to use HTML. JumpChart uses Textile, which is a very simple web text markup language that's kind of like a lightweight HTML. Instead of opening and closing tags that contain HTML surrounded by brackets, Textile works by placing a single character, just a few characters, before and after your web text to, you know, mark it up, so that it appears bold, italicized, blah, 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 etc., etc. Okay, when you start a JumpChart project, you're prompted to name it. Once you name your project, you are ready to go. The JumpChart workspace looks sort of like the tab pages in Firefox. To add a page, just click the Add Page tab at the top of the screen. Give your page a name, and it appears on the left side of your screen. If you want to add a subpage to any of your pages, just click on the page where you want to add the subpage on the left, and then click the tab that says Add Subpage. You can even change your mind. You can delete pages by clicking on the page that you want to eliminate, then clicking on a tab that's got one of those little circles with the line marked through it. You can even reorder your pages just by dragging the names of the pages up or down to the place where you want them to be. You can set the whole website up without putting in any content at all, and the coolest thing is that what you see and what your client will see is a website with navigational links down the left-hand side and content in the middle. I can tell you from my experience with JumpChart that I was able to create a simple 7-page website and paste in some content, even upload a few graphics in less than an hour. Geez, I've never been able to sit down and plan any website in that amount of time, much less add content to it. Now, the very coolest part. Once you've created the mock-up, you can invite your client via email to review it. I did that with Allison. Since I wasn't on the receiving end of the email, Allison will have to tell you how it worked and what it looked like, but I'm assuming she got a link in the email that she could click to view the site. I know she did, too, because I got an email that told me when she'd left a comment on one of the pages. That's where the interactive part comes in. Not only can your client or your other web team members review and comment on the preliminary site, when they do, you have a record of their comments that they made. Nothing is worse than designing a website according to the instructions and all of those emails and phone calls, then presenting a finished product that turns out to be not really what I wanted, even when you know you gave them what they asked for. Once you've completed the mock-up and everybody's approved it, You can export a single page or a whole website to your computer with the click of a mouse. JumpChart exports the site in HTML format with everything in the folder where it belongs so that it's fully functional as soon as you upload it to a web server. JumpChart even has valid, editable CSS as part of your project, so the exported site may require only a few tweaks to make it a finished product. JumpChart is an online service. It's not a piece of software. There's nothing to download, and it doesn't matter if you use Windows, Mac, or Linux. HTML is HTML is HTML, and that's what you get when you export your JumpChart project. It's pretty easy to learn, too. JumpChart has a great series of online videos and a video tour, walks you right through working with pages, content, files, and exporting your project. It even tells you about inviting people to review it. Each of these videos is only about 1 minute long, so it doesn't really tax your attention span either. The help feature is easy to use, and the help content is easy to understand. Right now, JumpChart has four types of accounts. You've got the free basic account, the $5 a month simple account, the $25 a month super account, and the $50 a month deluxe account. As you can probably guess, the more expensive the account you choose, the more projects, disk storage, pages, and users are available to you with your JumpChart account. My recommendation is that you visit www.jumpchart.com and take that video tour. Oh, and that you check out me and my podcast co-host, Kim Beasley, the blog queen, at www.viewsfromthecoop.com.
Thanks, Paige, for a great review. Paige and I enjoy immensely how completely different our styles are. I talk really, really, really fast, and she's got that great Southern drawl going on. We have a lot of fun together. Well, Paige, I really like the way you outlined the issues with creating a new website first so we could tell what problem JumpChart could solve. I did get an email from JumpChart telling me that you had created something for me to review. I was able to go over and make comments on different pages, as well as editing existing pages and adding new pages. As a collaboration tool for a team, I think this could work pretty well. I didn't follow the pricing exactly. I did have to have an account in order to log into the invitation, which made me wonder whether your clients would also have to have paid for an account, or whether they could have a login without having an account at all. Since there's a free option, maybe that's what they could do. Well, I'm really glad I had Paige do this review for us because she's clearly more skilled and knowledgeable about this topic than I am. Paige's Views from the Coop podcast has a delightful down-home feel to it, and you can even join into the podcast live while it's being recorded and participate. Even though she's currently a Windows user only, she's toying with the idea of getting a Mac. Anyway, thanks again, Paige, for the great review. Well, I've been telling you for about the last month or so why you should subscribe to the Wall Street Journal by clicking, of course, on the link on podfeet.com so I get credit for it. But I've changed my mind. You should not subscribe to the paper or online version. Why? Because it will make you late to work. At least that's what happened to me last Thursday. Let me explain. First of all, Thursday is the day they publish the wonderful Technology Journal. So there was Walter Mossberg's column reviewing Gateway's new One computer, which is supposed to compete with the iMac. But in reality, it's more expensive, slower, has a smaller screen for the same price. Oh yeah, and it doesn't have a built-in camera, it's noisier than the iMac, and it boots up slower. I had a relish in that article and reread it several times. Then inside that section, Walter had his Mossberg's mailbox, which is mildly entertaining. So far, I could have gotten to work on time. But there was also an interesting article about the Hollywood writer's strike. Did you know they only make 0.3% of DVD sales? And they make exactly zero if the things they write are published on the web, even if the distributor makes money off of ads? Okay, fine. Moving on. There was an article about how there's actually an ethanol glut in the United States right now. After all this doom and gloom about how we'll never be able to make enough, we're not smart enough to use what we're making. Well, I also learned about how Netlog has a social networking site with 28 million members because they produce in 13 different languages. Think about how complicated that is, but how cool it is. Well, clearly I'm way late for work already. But then there was an article about how some of the U.S. states have gotten tired of waiting for the federal government and are taking action to close the broadband gap and making it accessible to everyone. Well, according to the article, the U.S. only has 19.6 broadband subscribers per 100 inhabitants, less than 20%. That makes the U.S. 15th in the world. Shockingly, Denmark is number one at only 31.9%. I thought the percentages were much higher than that. Well, I'm at least a half hour late for work when I noticed the personal journal section has a whole piece on low-end laptops to get for your kids, like the EPC from Asus Tech and the XO1 laptop per child. Man, I had to read that whole article too to keep up the trends. I thought I'd make it up before noon, but then there was this great article about when to fix or ditch your electronics. I had no choice but keep reading. The bottom line is that you should by no circumstances go over to the right sidebar over at podfeet.com and click on the Wall Street Journal link and buy yourself a subscription, like for the holidays or for your spouse or your child to show them what newsprint looks like. Well, I'm finally getting around to something I've been wanting to do forever, and that's do an actual interview. We have Bart Bouchatz of BartBouchatz.ie on the line here. You've heard a lot of reviews by him, and we decided we wanted to have a conversation about Leopard. How you doing, Bart?
Hi, Allison. Glad to be here.
So is it raining in Ireland?
Give me a sec. Yes. It's always like raining in Ireland.
There's always an obligation that when you have someone on the line, you have to ask them about the weather. I don't know what that is, but anyway, let's kick in.
I'm going to have a wild guess here and say it's sunny in California.
Let me see. Yeah, it is. It's sunny here.
Shocking that.
All right, let's kick in. We wanted to talk about how Leopard is going in the second week. We were all excited and enamored last week, and I thought we'd talk about how it's going this week. So, Bart, you having any big issues with it?
Not any big issues, actually, apart from the fact that Spaces is still being buggy for me. As soon as I try to use, you know, Windows from the same application more than one space, all hell breaks loose.
I have noticed that it's kind of hinky, that I lost a few applications now and then. They were there somewhere, but it didn't matter what space I went to. I couldn't actually see them. And the only way I was able to figure out how to get out of it was to log out and log back in.
I haven't had that happen. At home, I have four spaces set up, and I have a Firefox window in three of them, and everything's generally a bit funny. Whereas in work, I've decided to install two browsers because it's a much better machine. And so I have one browser in each space, and that gives me almost no trouble.
Oh, okay. Well, to be fair, we probably should tell them what's happened to me this week. I did what's called a dirty install. I just pushed the installer and said, go. And it took my operating system and made it into Leopard on top of Tiger. This is not an archive and install, and it's not a clean install, and it's not an erase and install. It's a dirty install. Turns out that might not be your best strategy. The worst thing that happened to me was I had a couple of kernel panics on Thursday. Kernel panic is when the screen paints dark gray and it just says in 28 different languages, you're dead. So I ended.
Has it changed in Leopard at all?
What's that?
Has the kernel panic screen changed or?
Oh, you know, I didn't even bother reading it. I knew it said you're dead. So I just, this was just, you know, the game over screen.
So, it doesn't have the sad Mac anymore?
Oh, no. This is the thing where it's in a bunch of different languages. It says, you know, you just need to shut the power down, have a timeout now. So anyway, but I also had a lot of applications that were locking up. Like I said, Spaces was acting really weird. I would just lose applications right and left. So I know I should have done it from the beginning, and Bart did it the right way on all of his machines, but I've spent the last 24 hours reinstalling all my applications.
Well, I mean, to be fair, the reason I did a perfectly clean install on my MacBook Pro was because I had foolishly partitioned my drive, and now it was just a complete mess, so I wanted to wipe it anyway. And I would have done that 2 months ago, but I knew Leopard was coming, so I held off.
It is nice to have it fresh and clean and get all the goop out. It's sort of like if you move and you bring all the boxes of junk with you, you move from your last move, you're not helping yourself out, I think. So,
no, from time to time, you have to empty those boxes of junk.
Yeah. Well, okay, so now that I have a fresh install, we'll go forward from there. Did you install on very many computers, Bart?
I stuck it on my G4, my little Mac Mini. I stuck it on my MacBook Pro. And in work, I stuck it on my Dual G5, I think it was on Wednesday.
So you're going for it. Production time, huh?
Yeah, that's it. That's all my Mac's done, actually. I have no Tiger machines left. And so far, it hasn't bit me in the proverbial... Can I say ass?
No, you have to say fanny.
That's a really dirty word here in Ireland.
Oh, really? Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. We learn so much culturally here.
Yeah, don't we just? That's funny. Because over here, you can say the A word, no problem, but you can't say the F word that ends in Y.
Now, can you say butt?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, we'll stick with butt. That's universally okay, then.
What was I saying?
I don't know. You were saying something on the phone to me yesterday about how you actually like the way Leopard runs on your older Mac Mini because of the menu bars. Why don't you talk about
that? Well, yeah, it's one of those strange things, but having a crappier machine makes your Leopard experience better.
And why?
Let me to explain. Well, I presume it's because the thing only has 32 megs of graphics RAM, and so OS X, by default, turns off the silly transparency on the menu bar and on the menus, so you can actually use them. So they basically look like the menus in Tiger, except they have roundy corners instead of square ones. But you don't have these. Like, I have a lot of backgrounds that are astronomy-based, and I have little stars coming through the menu bar that look like highlights and stuff. It just looks silly.
If somebody wants to experience that to see what we're talking about, put on the desktop background that's a zebra skin and then try to read your menus across the top. People have written some scripts that'll convert your desktop images to put a white bar across the very top, a thin white bar, so that when it's underneath your menus, it'll look white.
Yeah, apparently it doesn't work, though, if you set your background up to change every 30 minutes like I do. Uh-huh. And I'm far too fond of my different backgrounds to do that.
Well, I thought that was kind of funny that there was an advantage of an older machine. Now, I did also... Oh, sorry?
Well, no, it's actually breathed a whole new life into the old G4. It's running better than it has ever run. And in fact, when I moved from Panther... Was it Panther?
Could be.
Panther to Tiger, it also did that. It was also got better. So that's with two OS releases now, my same old hardware has gotten better and better.
Now, do you find it's faster on the faster than it used to be? Tiger going to Leopard is faster on the Mac Mini?
Yeah, it's definitely snappier.
I'm definitely noticing it. It's very, very snappy.
You know, if you go mad and you multitask like hell, as soon as it has to go to the virtual memory, you know, the bottleneck is your hard disk, and it takes a few seconds to catch up again. But in general use, it's just really snappy.
That's great. That's great news. Now, we might want to draw a little bit of a contrast with another operating system that came out recently.
Yeah, it's a certain one that has Aero and glass in it. That's the one.
Where you can't use anything that you bought 6 months ago, much less. How old is that Mac Mini? 3 or 4 years?
Well, I pre-ordered it on the day Steve Jobs announced the Mac Minis.
So how far back is that? 3 or 4 years at least, right?
Must be 3 years. I can't imagine how it could be any less than 3 years. I'm sure someone will correct us anyway, but it must be 3 years old. It was on the very first crate of Mac Minis to come into the country.
Well, that's great. Well, hey, I've also installed it on my husband's G4 PowerBook, and it seems to be running fine, and my son's new iMac, both without incident, but I got to say, I'm still chicken to do Steve's G5 for his where he does his video work until I'm sure it's stable.
Well, I'll let you know how I get on with my G5 then, but so far it's been good.
Of course, I'd have to do a clean install on him, not that dirty install that I did to his PowerBook and Kyle's iMac, so...
I think a dirty install works fine unless you're the kind of person who likes to install and play with lots of stuff, sort of like you.
Who would that be?
Yeah.
Just a little bit. Well, hey, do you have any recommendations to people out there? Would you say it's ready for prime time? Would you put it on your mom's machine, that kind of thing, or should they just wait a little while?
I think it all depends on the apps you need. I would suggest to people that they Google the apps they use, and if they're all good to go, then the operating system's good to go.
Okay. Now, you did mention to me some Java things messed up.
Yeah, it seems Java on the Mac, on the new Leopard, is just a bit hinky at the moment. And there was talk, it was supposed to be Java 6 that went into Leopard, but it's not. It's Java 5. So I have a funny feeling they had hoped to do Java 6 and then they ran out of time or something. And I'd say one of the early updates is going to be a new JVM. So I've noticed I use a couple of Java-based apps. JEdit is a programming editor I like. And a whole bunch of my plugins for JEdit just refused to work under the JVM that's in Leopard, and they work just fine in Tiger.
Now, I worked with JAlbum Thursday, and it worked just fine. Didn't have any trouble with that, and that's Java-based.
Yeah.
So it's definitely not all
Java. I use some other Java app that's fine, but I think TalkShoe is also Java-based, and it's been given unbelievable trouble as well.
Yeah. Now, didn't you? Now you had trouble with GIMP as well?
A GIMP quite simply won't load. Yeah, that's about as troublesome as it gets, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose.
No, with the GIMP, it's down to lower-level libraries having changed, and the GIMP is compiled to use a certain version of a library, and it finds a different version, and it just goes, and dies.
Right, right. Well, hey, are there any hidden gems, things that got you really excited recently?
Well, the more I've been playing with this, I think quick look, whatever they call it, the whole new Finder really is just fantastic. And then really the Finder with Spotlight and Quick Look, those three sort of combine into one amorphous blob of greatness.
I definitely love Quick Look. It's so intuitive to just hit the space bar and go, oh, there it is. That's the one I wanted. I needed a phone number right before we got on the line here, and it was in Excel. I was like, oh, man, I got to go launch Excel and go get a cup of coffee. And I went, hey, wait a minute, Quick Look. Hit the button. There was my answer.
Yeah, well, if you think about it, if you have real files on your desk, you don't refer to them by name. You pick them up and you look at them and you say, oh, that looks like whatever.
Right,
whereas now with the CoverFlow, you do exactly the same on your computer. You just flick through it and look for what you want.
Andy Anatko on MacBreak Weekly was saying that each new revision of the Mac operating system rewards the sloppy people who don't organize their things properly.
Yeah, I heard that as well, actually. I thought it's very true. But I'm still one of those strange people who have hierarchical folders for everything.
Yeah,
but whenever I lose something, I don't spend time looking anymore. I just Apple Space, start typing.
I really like looking at the application logos now, real big. They're beautiful.
They've redone a lot of them as well.
Yeah, it doesn't solve any problem. It's just really fun to look at.
Nope.
Now, you've started using Time Machine, but I think Time Machine, I'm really skeptical about this.
Oh?
Well, okay, let's say you're a normal person, but you listen to podcasts. You're not an Uber geek, but you happen to listen to podcasts. So you say, okay, just Time Machine, take care of my home directory. So I download a bunch of podcasts, and then I listen to them, and I delete them. They're still there.
Uh-huh.
All of them.
For a while.
For a while.
For a while.
But that's just going to fill stuff up like crazy, isn't it? I mean, those are things you never want it to save.
Well, yeah, but there's plenty. The hard disks are big anyway. The way it works is it keeps, hourly backups for 24 hours, daily backups for a month, and then it just begins to delete stuff as it needs room. So it's quite sensible, really.
So if I delete something in the morning and then it keeps my daily backup in the evening, then it won't have that thing I deleted?
I think it will. But like, it doesn't really matter because it doesn't store multiple copies of it anyway.
Well, but I listen to, 10 or 15 podcasts a week. All those 10 or 15 are going to be in there, and the 10 or 15 the next week, and they're all going to be additive. I'm deleting them off my disk.
How big is a podcast?
Well, if you're listening...
We're talking about a gig a week?
Yeah, probably.
So we keep 4 weekly backups. That's 4 gigs.
On top of
it. It's not a problem on a modern drive, is it?
I don't know. I'm always running out of disk space. Oh, I forgot to mention that. That was probably the biggest thing on why my I had to reload the OS was I had a terrible time where my disk space was simply vaporizing. I was losing a half a gig in a half an hour. I lost 12 gig in a day. It just disappeared, and I never did figure out what was going on.
No, not even with mad, cool, Unixy, geeky commands. We still never figured it out.
Now, we gave it a good college try, though. Bart helped me for about a week there just trying to figure out what it was because I wanted to know for everybody else, but I finally gave in. So I don't know.
And that hasn't happened on your clean install, has it?
Not yet. I haven't been watching it too carefully, though. I better start. I'm still loading so many. I haven't loaded all my applications yet, so I don't have a stable environment to count it yet.
No, there's no point in watching it clock down while you're installing away like a good thing.
Right, right. I had one gem I hadn't talked about before is the voice Alex.
Yeah, I was impressing all the Windows guys in work with Alex. Like, it's pretty good.
Yeah, I think this is one of the AT&T natural voices that you can actually, you can buy voices this good, but basically the built-in voice, if you want to have it read things to you, is just tremendous. I got an email that was really long from a guy this week, but he's really interesting. Actually, it was the listener, Martin, and he wrote this. It was like 3 pages. My attention span just isn't that long, but I can listen that long. So I turned it on, told Alex to read to me, and it was perfectly listenable.
Excellent. Was it Leo Laporte was complaining that it still doesn't pronounce his name right?
Yeah, it's Laporte or something, but yeah, that was
Laporte or something else.
Andy Inoco.
But it got Andy Inoco, like, and that's a really difficult name.
But did you hear the week before he explained why? They called him up. Apple called him up and said, "Would you please record the way your you pronounce your last name?" And so they put it in there on purpose. Yeah, that was hardwired in.
Hang on, so Andy Inoco is now more important than Leo Laporte?
To Apple, evidently. Well, he's not a developer or anything, you know, so I think Andy's a little tighter, so. Anyway, that was a lot of fun. Well, how about driving you bonkers? What's making you crazy with Leopard?
What's making me crazy with Leopard? Well, Spaces is like, it's so close to being perfect, and it isn't. And every time it does something silly, it's like, gah! It's like, you know, like a jarring note in a symphony of love or something. It's just, you're stop it.
Yeah, now, the one thing I wish Spaces had that I realized why I use it so much in Linux is down in the bottom right corner, you get a little box that shows you the spaces, and you can just click on it to flip between them. A little faster than pushing an F key or you know, going using the command arrows to try to flip between them, I think.
Actually, I find the control arrow keys very, very useful for flicking between them. And simply tabbing.
If you're in the upper left and you want to get down to the lower right one, a single click would be faster, right?
Well, actually, I wonder, can I... let's hold down control and hit both arrow keys at once and see what happens. Ah, yes, it does work. If you hit both of them at once, it takes you down across the diagonals. So we just tested that now. It does work.
Okay. Well, in Linux, it shows you a little icon of like what's in front. Like if I have Firefox in front on one of those spaces, it would show me the little Firefox icon, so I even know which one to go to. Don't have to keep track. I just think that'd be a little nicer.
Yeah, I suppose. I never actually used that in Linux, though. What I do love about it in Leopard is that you can drag windows from one space to another.
Yes.
Hold them on the edge for a second, and then it moves across. I think that's really cool.
I do like that, except I find I'm doing it all the time, which means I'm wasting time. So I'm going to try it again now that I've got a clean install, because like I said, it got real strange before for me.
Oh, the new firewall. It used to be so easy. You know, you had your services in one tab, and then it automatically transfer over to the firewall, and you knew where you stood. With the new interface, your guess is as good as mine what that firewall is or isn't doing, and it's still off by default, which is very silly.
I haven't ever run it before, so I can't really comment on that. Now, you don't like stacks?
No, they're just silly. Before, you could have folders in your dock and get a full hierarchical view and go dig right down into them. Now you have this stupid flashy thing that's much less useful.
Yeah.
We've lost functionality and we've gained a bit of bling, but
it makes a
what's
cool
more
noise,
important?
Though, when you choose something in it.
Does it?
Yeah, it goes, whee! Makes a really neat little noise. I just did it while we were talking.
He says, right, I'm going to click here.
This makes good audio, by the way. We're listening, but you can't hear us.
That didn't make a noise for me.
Oh, well, maybe it was me hallucinating.
There now. Anyway.
Anyway, the one place I did find it really useful was the stack that it created for my applications in Parallels. That was really nice because I could see all of my applications in one click, and I could go straight into IE, for example, which would be the only reason I'd launch it anyway.
Well, something they could do that would make an insane improvement would be to give the stack the icon of the folder it is rather than showing you all the icons on top of each other for what's in there. It just looks really bad. And it's always changing, so I've no idea which stack is which just by looking at it, because every day it's different.
Yeah, that doesn't... I don't think I'll probably use it, but, oh well, maybe some people like it.
I'm using it for the download stack, and I'm finding that very helpful.
Well, it put that there by itself. I didn't even ask for it.
Well, I had to set up Firefox to actually use that downloads folder, but I find it very good, because I'm not a Safari person.
You're just weird that way.
Anyway,
go ahead.
I can't do without the plugins in Firefox. I gave Camino another go this week, and that just made me grumpy as well.
I found that I run them both interchangeably. I just keep them both running. I don't know. It doesn't matter to me.
Camino fell down because it doesn't have inline searching like Firefox does, which is something I really need in work.
Well, that's definitely the search is why I use Safari more predominantly, is I just love being able to see highlighted all of the different places where the find has found it. Because in Firefox, I'd go, okay, I know you found it, but I can't see it. The highlighting was not good enough. I like it a lot better than Safari.
Okay, I've always found the highlighting very good and just being able to hit F3 to cycle through them.
Yeah, I can't find them. Hey, well, I did promise that I would let you get ready to have your dinner company over tonight, so I don't want to keep you any longer.
Okay, well, it was a pleasure chatting to you. Hopefully the listeners find it remotely interesting to hear us natter away.
Well, we'll see. We'll see if the listenership plummets after this or not.
Well, I'd rather they didn't plummet, but just sent us an email saying, nice try, but don't do it again.
And we didn't mean you, James. Please don't. Well, let's see. What do you say? Happy computing.
Indeed. Until next time, happy computing.
Well, that was a lot more fun than actually having to prepare material on my own, I tell you. I think I might do more of these interview things. They're fun. It's really easy to have a conversation with someone. It's really hard to talk alone in a microphone. Don't worry, I won't swamp the whole show with that sort of thing, but I had a lot of fun doing that. I need to mention one more piece of listener feedback before we go. Quality Control Director Steve has decided to check back in after a long absence. He let me know in no uncertain terms that last week's podcast had much more than an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Oh, wait till he listens to this one. Well, anyway, on that note, I think that's going to wrap up this fun-filled episode of the No Silicast. I really appreciate all the great feedback you sent in. Keep it up by emailing me at allison@podfeet.com. And keep putting those great comments up on the blog. I love all the energy going on there lately. Thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.